C-minus 43. Stevenson Farm, East View, Colorado. Tara, you need to get out of here right now, Clark said. He didn't bark it as an order, but his tone was as full of urgency as the words themselves. Listen to me. I know this doesn't make any sense, but Emma knows what's going on. He's not our friend. There's just something we need to talk to him about. Finally, Tara looked away from Richard Walker and into the car.
Damn right it doesn't make any sense.
As Walker stood like a statue in the doorway, Rooster dashed out from behind him and bounded towards the car. Tara recoiled despite Dan's insistence that he was friendly. She calmed down slightly when the dog innocently sniffed around her feet and then Emma's car, apparently wondering as to the whereabouts of the Ford sister he was already acquainted with.
You really do need to leave, Dan said, more softly than Clark's earlier attempt at making the same point. We'll explain everything later, but you're not safe here, and you can't tell anyone where we are or who lives here, okay? None of us would be safe if you did. Emma is supposed to be home tomorrow night, so if you can just forget about this until then...
Are you coming in or not? Walker boomed from his doorway.
Dan and Clark both opened their doors to step out of the car. Tara immediately grasped onto Dan's arm.
I'm scared, she said very simply.
You should be, Clark said. This isn't a game, and that's why you need to go. But I'll tell you what, okay? If you go home now, we'll be there in like 20-25 minutes at most. Can you do that?
Tara nodded quickly and gulped. As her frightened eyes looked away from Clark and into Dan's, it struck him for the first time that beyond her appearance and sometimes her accent, she really was nothing like Emma. Just like the McCarthy boys, the Ford girls were built for different things. Evidently, Tara wasn't built to handle a situation like this without Emma any more than Dan was without Clark. Rooster thought about making an attempt to enter Emma's car when Tara opened the door, but in the end he walked side by side with Dan towards his waiting owner.
Who was the girl and why was she here?
Walker demanded as they reached the doorstep and the car pulled away. Clark stepped forward and grabbed Walker's collar, pressing his nose against the old man's.
When I want you to talk, you'll know. Who was the girl and why was she here?
Walker repeated, perfectly parroting his initial tone.
I know it wasn't Ford because I know she's busy cavorting around Europe with Fiore. Kudos for moving on so quickly, Dan.
Shut up, Clark spat at him before briefly turning to Dan. Ignore him. And as for you, what's this game you think you're playing sending stuff to our house? Bringing your shit to our doorstep?
Walker pulled Clark's hand off his collar and stepped back, naturally only being able to do so with Clark's cooperation. He looked at Dan.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
Don't give me that crap, Dan said. No one else could have sent them. I didn't know the first package was from you until the second one arrived, but then it made sense.
What second package? Walker blurted out, his eyebrows raised. What package is?
Clark let out an exaggeratedly smug laugh and patted Dan on the back.
Nice one, man. Touché, McCarthy.
Walker sighed, not sounding or appearing overly disappointed to have let it slip.
Now come inside and sit down.
Clark held Dan back.
No.
No?
Walker, this isn't a discussion, Clark said very firmly. This is a warning. Next time you try to mess with us, I'll be back here, alone, and there'll be no more warnings. Got that?
Walker gave up on Clark and focused solely on Dan. Just remember what I told you about full disclosure, he said. You have an emergency stop button just like I did. President Slater finally said something today. Did you see it? Did you hear it? Did anyone see or hear it? After all that's happened, all she puts out is a press release reaffirming her support for the GSC's goals and operations. You see, that's what we're up against.
Stop talking like we're on the same side, Dan snapped. We're not allies. You're the reason my life turned to shit. Your lies are the reason I can't sleep at night. And now you're going to stand there and pretend like we're friends?
I didn't say friends.
This is the last thing I'm ever going to say to you, Dan said. So I need you to hear it. If we thought that exposing your lies would be good for the world, we would have done it the night we found out. We don't care about your politics or your grudges or your Cold War power fantasies. Why can't you get that through your head? The reason I live with this every single day
is that there would be anarchy if I didn't.
For a time, perhaps, Walker said. But things would die down eventually. Heads would roll far beyond the GSC's walls, granted, but the world would bounce back. It always does.
Dan shook his head and turned around to leave. There was no sense in trying to discuss it any further. He understood what kind of consequences would come with an exposé of the hoax, even if Walker pretended not to. He knew that ripping the rug of reality from under the world's collective feet wasn't the kind of thing that could be bounced back from so easily, not when people would naturally suspect that their governments and leaders had been in on the double twist all along. Especially now that the Kerguelen bolide had turned all kinds of planetary threats into water cooler talk and headline topics, the revelation that society's elected protectors were either complicit in such a hellish deceit or so complacent as to have been hoodwinked by a godforsaken hoax would lead to burning cities and chaotic uprisings. Emma had once told Dan that people tended to riot when they were angry rather than scared. More recently, she had impressed upon him the unwelcome point that public order could flat-out collapse if people were suddenly struck with the levels of both, which they would feel at the precise moment the hoax ever became public knowledge.
"Who was the guy on the bike that brought the package?" Dan suddenly asked. "A regular courier," Walker replied. "Don't worry, I was careful. The pickup wasn't here."
Dan certainly didn't need any convincing that Walker could keep things under wraps when he had to. Satisfied with that, if nothing else, he then turned away and set off towards the car, prompting Rooster to bark in disappointment. Clark crouched down and patted the dog's head in a final farewell.
"Thanks for your help at Lolo, little guy," he said. "We won't forget you."
Clark then walked away to join Dan in the car.
"Don't forget me either,"
Walker called after him, a certain spark back in his voice.
"I'm not dead yet."